Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Mick McCarthy.
What?
I was typing on my Google Doc saying Morata is right. I didn't think he played in the Prem. Yes.
The point's been declared.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The Coygig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
I'm very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome to the Koi Gig podcast. Kathleen McNamee here with you to look at that plan, if you can use that word exactly, for women and girls football that was launched last night by Hannah Dingley. Before we jump into it, I am joined by Karen Duggan and Scarlett Heron to look through it. I just wanted to go through some of the headlines in the papers. And I say some because they are limited in that I think there's only three papers this morning that I can actually find it. The Irish Times doesn't have anything either online or in the print edition. We have here in the Irish Daily Mail, wishful thinking is the headline there. In the Independent, FAI outline women's football vision without plan to fund it. Again, quite a major one. And then in the Examiner, Dingley wants limited resources utilised. So this has all come in a pretty remarkable 24 hours for Irish football in general, you would say, with also some of the clubs saying that they no longer want to be associated with the FAI. Just some interesting quotes here from Hannah Dingley. "The key thing around this plan is how we are going to resource it," she said. "We don't have any money, so we need to think about how we are going to impact widely. Sending a development officer to deliver something is not going to impact widely, but empowering women within our community to deliver stuff is going to have more impact on the game." And that was the first time we'd heard from Hannah Dingley in a year in a role as well. Karen, I can see you there. You're itching, itching to say your piece on this. What are your thoughts?
Wholly underwhelming would be kind of the initial thoughts. Usually when someone, well, firstly, I thought we were going to be promised a strategy. That was the original line that was being taken. That's quickly been whittled down to a plan. And it's a very narrow scope within the plan. And I don't know if this is like the project manager in me, that's my job, but like a plan usually has like scope, a schedule, the resource plan, the cost, and how you're going to track it. Okay, what I'm seeing is just buzzwords on a paper. So empower, that's the big line that we keep using. We're going to empower people, and maybe that's all part of a master plan, but there's no how. There's no how to any of this. And for me, it doesn't address any of the things that I was expecting. For me, I think given where we've been in the last year, we've had a lot of talk about, you know, the national team and where it's going and stuff like that. And it obviously doesn't address that, but it also doesn't address things like the fallout of the DDSL, where we had 400 girls with no football. These are obviously girls who are already playing. This one's very focused on retention of girls and teenagers and dropout and all of these kind of facts and figures that we kind of know about teenage girls and their dropout rate in schools and in terms of how much they play and keep up sports. And obviously that is an issue. I don't know if it's the biggest issue facing us in the women's game at the moment, given the growth of the game and how far behind we're allowing ourselves to get. And I think the fact that she's saying there's no budget and we're not going to resource it, it just doesn't hold much weight to me.
No, not at all. And Scarlett, we were saying that just before we came on air there, that there doesn't seem to be much substance, as Karen is saying. There's no plan. If they had come out with this straight after the World Cup, the week after the World Cup, after the homecoming was done, you'd be like, OK, fair enough. Haven't had a whole lot of time to maybe capitalise and put a plan in place, but we know they're heading somewhere. We're nearly 2 years post the World Cup at this stage, you know, a year and a half at the very least. and this is the best that they can come up with. Karen mentioned some of those figures there. So the ones mentioned are, say, only 11% of teenage girls in Ireland are meeting recommended daily physical activity levels. Only 9% of women volunteer in football clubs. 87% of teenage girls do not have high body esteem. Only 6% of sports science research is exclusively on female athletes. All facts and figures that we know to be relatively true. But at no point in this plan do they say, right, only 9% of women volunteer in football clubs. In the next 2 years, we're going to increase that to, I don't know, 25%, whatever figure they want to put on it. There's nothing there.
Yeah, and I think like the strategic plan that was released, I think maybe last year, the year before, the joint one with both the men's and the women's side, there was at least, there was plans in place and there was KPIs and there was things to meet before a certain time. So for, say, one of them was qualified for the Euros. Now, obviously, that didn't happen, but we're still striving towards those heights. But I think here, there's nothing really to strive to. It's, well, we need to, there's only this amount here and we need, we, there's no like plan or goal either to get that higher. It's just kind of pointing out facts and figures that, as you said, we already kind of know. I think as well, like, it doesn't really focus on the main problems. It's very recreational focused, obviously focused on getting more girls involved in the game at even a smaller level. But I think the issue with it not mentioning schools at all, I think schools is a big place that you can target girls football and get girls into doing like PE and stuff through football and then getting them into pros through their schools and their schools teams or whatever. And as well as that, as Karen mentioned, the international teams, there's no real mention of that. It's kind of about talking to past and present players about what they think should be done. But as you said, that could have been done 2 years ago, and it's mad to think that we're 2 years from the World Cup. I think that time's flown, and obviously we wanted to push the game on, and I think it has grown. The league here has grown. You'd like to think that we've grown as a nation, but not maybe to the heights that we would have hoped at the time.
Yeah, I think you can definitely say that, sorry Karen, that it has grown, but not in the ways that we talked about, say, in the lead up to the World Cup, and we were excited. I remember having conversations with you, with Emma Byrne, with people like Alana Canaan as well, who reports on the league quite a lot, about all the possibilities that could be there. Even with the knowledge that the FAI don't have any money, there were still things that could have been done.
Yeah, and like Skylar touched on it there, yeah, we can focus on going into schools, but Dingley made a point of saying we're not going to get our development officers in. I know when I was in primary school and we used to have like GA development officers in, we loved going to them. We loved that kind of outside influence and someone showing us new things. I think that that should be part of the plan. But again, it's like, no, we're not doing that because that won't empower people. We're going to empower everyone to do it. Like, who are they going to empower? They're going to come to me and ask me to set up recreational time for 11 to 14 year olds in Piemont. First of all, where's the facilities there to do that? Do I have the time to do it? I'm not sure. Maybe someone else would. But where's the pitches? Our pitches are chock-a-block. You can barely get a parking space. So where is this going to be done? How are they going to help us find the facilities to do that? And volunteers in clubs, they're kind of at the pin of their collar as it is. So they're talking about getting the heads of each of the clubs in, so the head of football in each of the clubs to kind of develop this. And it's always, the onus always seems to be on the club. Even within our league, it's always, oh, Shamrock Rovers, they're like a benchmark here, they were able to do that, but that was them themselves. The league didn't encourage it, and then other teams are going to fall behind because they can't help a team like Piemont to get up to those levels because we don't have the resources, we don't have the finances, we're not, there's not a parity there. So by putting the onus on clubs, it's, again, comes back to budget. Who has the biggest budget? Who can do the best with that? And then it's completely at the discretion of the club how they want to use that budget, whether they want to put it into boys academies, whether they want to develop the underage girls. There's no actual directive to clubs on how they're supposed to manage this. There's no how in any of this. It's all well and good to say we want more girls playing, and maybe we obviously do, we want way more girls playing, it's brilliant, it's always good to be involved in the team. It's been like, sport has been the most formative thing in my development throughout my whole life, and you know, have great friends from it and all that. But if we look at the football and get to the crux of it, like we had Rooshie Littlejohn after we didn't qualify for the Euro saying, we're not developing enough technical players. And there's no mention of how we're going to increase, you know, contact time for the girls who are already, you know, on a development path, how we can get there, how can make them more technical and stuff like that. There's hints of it when journalists ask Stingley throughout yesterday, but again, there's nothing on paper. There's no timeline. There's no outcomes. There's no way of tracking how we're going to develop over the next couple of years. We need a tangible outcome at the end of this. And to say we have more girls playing, I'm sure that will make a nice headline for the FAI. But the quality of player we're producing, a sustainable kind of a sustainable plan that we can continue to develop top quality players. And yeah, we're going to all of a sudden have a second tier in our league. The onus is going to be on the clubs to do that, to step that up, to get the facilities, to get the licensing. Like, yeah, it's just passing the buck as far as I can see.
Well, Scarlett, whenever that second tier was mentioned, and obviously that is something that has been mentioned previously in the report that came out last year in February, you just laughed a little bit at the idea or the concept of it, considering, I assume, the state of where we're at the moment.
It's so far away. It's not even, it shouldn't be in the trajectory at the minute. It shouldn't be in that plan. It's not something that we should be striving for at the minute. We should be aiming towards improving the league as it is, getting more teams into the league and improving the quality of the teams in that league. And I don't mean in terms of, it's as Karen said, clubs don't have the resources to improve their underage levels or to put an academy in place. And I think the FAI need to help with that rather than try strive for something that seems so far away. That's 10, 15 years away at a push.
I totally agree, Scarlett. I mean, realistically, if you look at the age profile of most of the teams in like our league, like a lot of our teams are made up of a lot of under 19 players anyway. If we go and create more senior teams, you're just going to pull away from the under 19, under 17 leagues. And it's just, does that help a development pathway when some girls develop different at different age groups? Some people find their feet at under 17, some find it at under 19. If they're forced into a senior setup before they're ready for it and they're playing against teams who are maybe farther along the path and they start getting beaten really well, is it counterproductive? I think improving the 17s, 19s and senior teams as we are, like Scarlett said, that surely is a bigger focus than just getting more teams into the league. Again, that just seems like a licensing thing, a money thing, a semantics thing to say, oh, we've got more and more players. Yeah, we're quite far away from that. There's so much work to be done before we get to that point. And yeah. Also, they're talking about aligning the seasons. Like, we had aligned the seasons before and there was an issue with pitches and the quality of pitches and facilities and stuff like that. So are they going to help clubs to, you know, maintain pitches and give them money towards development of grounds? And is there going to be more AstroTurfs available if we are going to switch to that winter league? Because that was essentially the problem before. We didn't have the quality of pitches to maintain a winter league. So yeah, aligning the seasons is well and good if we have the facilities. But again, that was just mentioned in passing in interviews. It's not on the plan.
Mm. Well,
there's,
I think,
on the plan.
Yeah. And also, like, no matter what part we talk about in this whole thing, it is going to boil down to money. And we know that the FAI has a massive issue with money across the game. It's not just, you know, the women and girls plan that it is looking for this sort of funding, you know. LOI academies, that was a massive thing during the week. You had Mark Canham announcing the plan to try and have more contact hours for younger players in coaching and development last week, which has also created a rift between clubs and the organisation. So the issues that we're pointing out here, we are very aware that this is an ongoing thing throughout the organisation, and the ripple down effect comes to everyone. You know, like, you can't necessarily say that yesterday's announcement from the club saying that they were considering breaking away is actually really all that separate to the announcement of the plan yesterday evening, because, you know, Scarlett, if Shamrock Rovers left, you know, if the club decided to do that, that would obviously directly impact you, your current playing career. Now, I think these things get thrown around at this stage, so we don't know which way it is going to go, but is there a plan or a world where you can see them doing some sort of plan, maybe not having it as vague as this, being totally aware that the money isn't there that is needed for all the stuff that we want to happen, but actually having an outline of, okay, well, we can do this. So this is what we're going to do. And here is a 5-step plan. We're going to hire this person. They're going to control going out into schools or whatever it is. And they're going to do that. And that's where the money is going to be spent. Or is this just a case where there literally is zero euros in the pocket? So there is no way that they could ever have said something like that.
Yeah, like I think it's highlighted there in the papers, like money is their main issue. And like Hannah Dingley does recognise that, and they're trying to sort of make the best out of what they do have. And I think if we were to put an actual strategic plan in place and highlight the areas we need to target, you'd be awfully reliant on volunteers. It would kind of become like a bit of, like the GAA obviously are very reliant on volunteers, but I think that kind of grows in the community as well. So if you're in a small rural area, like if you're in Mayo or in Monaghan or something, and you're trying to build the game there and you have, say, 10 different clubs, all of girls teams in the league, you're going to need an awful amount of volunteers, and you're going to need a development officer, as they said, to go in and sort of give them something to strive for and give them something to play for. And then obviously you have your MGLs or your DDSLs or whatever your sort of emerging talent programs are. You have your Gaynor Cup, and those things are all really good, but I think we need to grow on it. And I think as well that boils down to volunteers. And I think that if we're ever going to progress in this, and if there's no money there, you're going to have to look at the amount of adults involved in the game. A lot of them are parents. Like, we have to be realistic. A lot of them aren't there for the, they are there for the goodness of their heart, but it's also they're involved in the game in some way. They're coaching their daughter or their niece or their whatever, and that's the reason they're going to be there. Now we have to try, I suppose, I don't know, we're having the same conversations about trying to build the game and develop it, and there's been nothing that's come out to give us any sense of hope. Like, we're not in the FAI board, we can't really make these decisions, and we're kind of just hoping that someone can come out and give us this big plan that's going to change Irish football. But I think at this stage that's a bit unrealistic. And
yeah, but like, yeah, maybe if they were transparent and said, okay, this is the plan, and the reason that the plan is this concise and isn't, you know, as expansive as we would have wanted on the overall landscape, is because this is our budget. And maybe that would be the dose of reality we need to say, okay, we can stop critiquing here. But from the outside looking in, Dingley has had, what, like 10 months or something to put this together? Like, what have we spent to get to this point where we've got a very, very vague PowerPoint presentation to put in front of us? Like, are we being as wise with our resources as we possibly can? Like, we're at a point with the FAI where they are. We totally acknowledge the budgetary restrictions, but that means you have to be really, really smart with how you're using your money. And it taking 10 months to come up with this plan and spending whatever it took to do the research and stuff like that, is that the best use? Could we have done something a bit better with that money? Yeah. I don't know. There needs to be a review of absolutely top to bottom of that.
I'd love to see a breakdown of sort of like an annual review of how the money is spent, because I wonder, like, obviously we spend it on the international teams, the underage teams, but how much of it's put into clubs and like grassroots and different things like that? I'd love to, I don't know, we don't have access to that, but it'd be interesting.
Yeah, well, there seems to be a unwillingness to go into any specifics. So say one of the like more interesting parts of this arguably is the Future Heads of Football program, which in and of itself could be really interesting if it's getting, now it doesn't actually really specifically say if they're looking at getting, you know, specifically coaches, are they looking at committee, are they looking at an executive level? But it says, launch a Future Heads of Football programme to develop a diverse group of football leaders, create regional networks of Future Heads of Football, design and deliver workshops to support Future Heads of Football. It's probably the most direct thing in the entire plan that's there. But then when asked about it last night as to why there was no actual figure put on it in terms of how many future leaders is that going to be? Is it going to be 5, 10, 50, 150? Dingley said, we have set some internal figures, but I was very cautious not to put them out in the world because sometimes we do programs by numbers. So if we deliver 50 programs, we can pat ourselves on the back. That is wonderful. But actually, what impact does that 50 programs make? So in 2 years' time, we can look at the impact those programs have made, women who sat in committees, girls playing football, who can say their club is a more inclusive place, and how they have impacted the change. That is what we want to see. That to me just doesn't make any sense. again, it's like, just put a figure on it, say this is what we want, and then you can measure, you can, there are other ways that you can measure the ripple down effect later on, surely.
You have to have an aim, otherwise they could do one, if they got one really good person, they're like, oh, the value of having one really good person, you know, it's worth 50 people who aren't as good. And it's nonsense. There has to be, like, to call something a plan or a strategy, there has to be outcomes, you know, that we can look back on and review and say that was a success or that wasn't a success. How are we supposed to learn from things if we're not actually assessing something based on these outcomes or the desired outcomes? Like, in, it has to be run like a business, you know, like, you wouldn't work in a company and do a project and say, oh, we hope to increase sales, but if people like us a bit more, or, you know, if the product looks a bit prettier, then that's a success too. No, it'll come down to actual facts and figures. Mm. There's no facts and figures in this plan at all. There's the facts and figures about dropout rates, which we know. There's no aim here. And I don't know if that's because they feel like they're held so tight that they're afraid to put a number on it in case they fail. And it's a kind of...
Well, that's what it feels like from the outside.
A preview of, like, or setting our expectations that things aren't going to get better in the next couple of years, which is, you know, very, very depressing. It might well be the case, but we need more transparency from it all.
Yeah,
I just found it very, very underwhelming that it took that long. Especially when you're kind of looking around what's happened in the last couple of years, and notably grassroots in terms of DDSL and notably international in terms of not qualifying for a major tournament. That's both ends of the spectrum. And we're not focusing on either of those things, which for me are big problems.
Yeah. I mean, I wanted, this is the thing that annoys me, because I was like, this is going to be great. You know, we have the first week of the league. You guys both had decent results. We can come on, talk about the future of women's football and be a little bit optimistic. But I don't think that's going to be the case, judging by this conversation. If you do want to hear more about what Hannah Dingley said, Nathan was at that press conference last night with her and actually did get a one-to-one with her, which is up, unlocked across all the Off the Ball football platforms. So you can listen to it yourself. You can read the report yourself, make up your own mind. But I think it's pretty obvious from this side of the table how we all feel about it.
I just thought there was going to be an associated document. When I saw the PowerPoint, I was like, oh, this is just what she'll present at the launch.
Oh, and that's then what
there'll
we
be
all like thought.
A, there'll be a book that goes with it that says, here's the dates we're going to start, here's the plan, here's the outcomes, here's this, that, and the other. And it's all like, oh, we're keeping that target internal, we're keeping that internal. No, put it in front of us. Put it in front of us, if it's there. That's what's making me question that those targets are not even there, the fact that it hasn't been put in front of us.
Yeah, and the fact that it has made absolutely no ripple, it seems, across the footballing world this morning or even last night, apart from us really and people very internal to the game. Like, this is the sort of thing that should have been splashed across the back pages this morning, saying, you know, this is a target, this is where football in this country is going. I don't even want to put women in front of that. This is just where football in this country is going, because if we keep qualifying it in that way, I don't know if people will see it.
There was nothing to put across the back page. I think that's the main issue.
Yeah, that's probably
the
problem.
Nothing. What would you put on the back page? You wouldn't fill it, honestly. Yeah, there's, like, this conversation's a bit barren because it's a bit barren itself, the plan. Like, there's nothing really to discuss. There's no like big new plan to, or like sort of strategy to bring women's football to new heights, which we've been trying to do for the last few years.
Or even just dig your teeth into a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's nothing that isn't kind of referenced within the player pathway. Obviously you were talking about mentorship programs, and we're putting like a title on these different things that are going to get more women involved. But there's a lot of it that looks very similar to what is already in the player pathway. And that's why I'm just wondering why it took this long to come up with this.
Well, there'll certainly be some interesting questions to be answered. And hopefully it's not another year before we hear from Hannah
the question. Yeah,
Dingley. Well, that's the thing as well. Like, even just getting in front of her to ask the questions, you know, no one has.
I'd say she spoke quite well. She was quite good at her deflection techniques as well yesterday. I feel like she's well versed in that area of things. But we're going to have to keep asking the question if we're going to get any sort of real answer, I think.
Definitely.
And it's going to have to go to Mark Hannum as well. It's going to have to go up to that level.
Oh yeah, definitely can't be just the sort of thing that falls on her head and no one else's. You know, this is a full FAI executive. If they really want to commit to this plan that supposedly has all these internal targets and figures that we're not allowed to see in place.
Because I do think she referenced back to that player pathway plan a good few times, and that's all well and good, but we need an update on how that's going. Mm. What's been achieved in the last year? How are we tracking for next year? I know it's like a 12-year plan, but we need like regular updates to say, oh, we're 10% of our target, we're this, that and the other. They obviously don't want to put that in front of us, but I think it's at a point where they're going to have to, whether it's to set our expectations or whether it's because they actually need to rehaul their plan, which after a year you shouldn't have to do, but it kind of seems like that's where we are. Obviously with the fallout in the men's league and stuff like that, there's a lot going on. So I think it all needs to be just laid out on the table now.
It's very easy for things to get missed as well when there is that much going on, so it is something that we will be keeping an eye on this podcast anyways over the next while. It's Karen's favourite thing to do.
It's not my favourite thing to do.
I was being sarcastic about that because I know how frustrated it makes you when there is so many opportunities to just make a bit of a difference. It doesn't, you know, we're not asking for Irish football to suddenly be winning World Cups or something. It's just, you know,
one thing though, it's good. The only thing I seen that I was kind of happy with was the fact that they're looking, if UEFA make a 21s tournament or competition, that we're going to put a team in and the development squad will continue, which, like, obviously personally for someone my age is good to see, but also just that it's not a once off, it's something that's going to be continue and hopefully materialise into a proper competitive team to play against other nations. So I think that's a positive to take from it.
That is a positive, and that's probably something that's been buried a little bit in everything that has happened, because I know how much you said that having that experience has been really beneficial as someone who is in that little in-between sphere. But if it's a once-off, it's not going to be all that useful. So we shall also keep an eye on that. And your flourishing career, Scarlett, of course, as well. And Karen, your flourishing career too, you know.
My flourishing retirement.
only getting started. How are we both feeling quickly after the weekend? First round down, Karen, legs feeling all right, ready to go for another five years?
I didn't play the game. I was sick, so I didn't play. Look, it wasn't the most comprehensive win by us, but it was good to kind of kick off with a win. Obviously, we have had a lot of change over pre-season and stuff like that, so it was good to just get some points on the board and hopefully settle us. I think it is going to be a case that we kind of grow into the league a little bit, kind of see how we go. But yeah, positive to get the points on the board. I think the talking points from the weekend was more so on Scarlett's end of things, which obviously was a massive result for Shamrock Rovers, because I was hyping Shells, and I still would hype Shells quite a lot because of the talent that they have and the signings that they made. But to go to Talca and get a win in that fashion, Scarlett, was pretty sweet, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I mean, my weekend was made, to be honest. My week was made. I'm still, like, I walked in training last night and I felt like I was 10 feet tall. So, yeah, no, it was a great start for us. Like, to win in that manner is always brilliant. It was like 95th minute or something to get a last minute winner was kind of something that we were crying out for last year. Any sort of bit of, to get a bit of momentum and to spark a bit of life into us. So we just need to build on it, I think. Not to get like carried away, if Shells will still be there at the end of the year, they'll still be ticking away.
Well, your win percentage against Shells is massive. Yeah. Like that was, I don't think anyone really realised it until after the game at the weekend.
We, funny enough, never beat them when it matters. Like we've lost them in two FAI Cup games in the semi final and the quarter final last year. So we're good against them in the league, but we need to improve our cup runs, I think, a little bit against them.
Well, I think this could be a big year for our Rovers. Like, a lot of, like, your issues in previous years was just drawing games. Mm. It's not like the play wasn't good and the talent wasn't there. It's just a matter of getting over the line in those kind of games where you are dominating possession oftentimes. So, yeah, I do. I think it was a good statement from yourselves to kick off the season like that. The other interesting thing, I suppose, was Athlone trying to sort out their visas and stuff like that. That'll be interesting to see how that goes. But they obviously started with a big win as well. Yeah, I'm sure they will by the time we play them anyway.
Guys, thank you very much for jumping on. Apologies that it wasn't for a more exciting plan, or at least something we could sink our teeth into and discuss a little bit more.
Yeah.
I did actually see that you didn't play at the weekend, Karen, but I thought you were just doing like a little rusha for the start of the season, you know.
Playing a coy.
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
I was absolutely dying sick last weekend. Didn't really get out of bed. So.
Oh, well, I'm very sorry.
Back on track now.
Glad you're feeling better. And I'm sure all our Koi Gig Pod listeners will say the same thing. The Koi Gig Pod and Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, official snack partner to the Republic of Ireland women's national team. Karen and Scarlett, thank you very much. We will be back. We didn't even touch on the fact that Mark Skinner is now the longest serving manager in the WSL.
Bonkers.
After Gareth Taylor.
Bonkers.
Being fired in a very strange form. Bonkers, as Karen would
Bonkers.
Say. Even Alex Greenwood yesterday seemed to not really know what to say, because I don't think City players exactly expected it to come. But we will leave you with that for now, and we will look at all that a little bit later on. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you all again very soon.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball, in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.